You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 20 July. We had Chinese lending rates announced earlier this morning. No change. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. In the show today, Nkunza Sanlam Private Wealth. Big down day for tech on Friday, 1.5%, but off over 8% overall. Broader equity market off only some 2.5%. We're seeing a rotation out and some bank earnings. Nick said last week to watch them. Man, they shot the lights out. Warren Bahai from Stanlib Asset Management. It's AI opportunity also becoming a source of risk. And Keith McLachlan, Element Investment Managers. Netflix results. I thought the numbers weren't bad. The market didn't seem to agree. We'll get thoughts on that. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, 42 errant municipalities off the finance minister's naughty list, receiving full or partial payment of the July equitable share. Business day, order turned 400 million. PIC blunder fined 400,000 for another shoddy work. Morning markets, US was red on Friday, S&P down 1%, NASDAQ 1.5% lower. East is mixed. We got Sydney down 0.4%, Tokyo closed for Marine Day, Hong Kong is up 2.2%, and Tencent up 3.8%. Commodities mixed on the gold. On the green, we've got gold at 4,026, we've got Brent at 90.06. PGMs a couple of dollars weaker, platinum 1,613, palladium 1,249. The rand is 16.52, Bitcoin 64,600, and top 40 opening call looking for a green open, 480 points or little under 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nkunza Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the time. A lot of screaming headlines over the weekend around a big sell-off in tech. And it was 1.5%. I mean, I don't know how big that is, but we'll take the headlines, I guess. But digging more deeper, I was looking at the NASDAQ, some 8% down. S&P only some 2% down. We're seeing a bit of rotation out of tech, out of the South Korea memory froth. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, morning, Simon. I think all of the above, quite frankly. I mean, I think it's more of a positioning unwind on what has been a very crowded AI trade. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't buy into this fundamental story just yet. I mean, they still, they've got their order books are full up for the next 4 to 5 years as far as what we can understand. I think also bearing in mind as well, a lot of leverage in the system. I mean, if you step away from Friday's session, I mean, firstly, US now makes up, 72% of the MSCI world, and that's an extraordinary bet on that sector. Yeah. All of those are mostly AI names as well. But, if I drill down a little bit of a deeper too, I think also news that Chinese AI startup, that Moonshot, came out last week as well. It's difficult to get the full read through. I think more than anything, a little bit of online. I don't think it's worth panicking just yet.
Yeah, the Chinese Moonshot came out, was it Kimi K3, I think they call it, which is matching the sort of maybe second gen OpenAI's and Anthropics, not the complete frontier, but the one level behind. Changing track slightly, you mentioned last week, we talked, results were coming out, earnings season was starting, and the expectation is quite chunky for what market is looking for. I was going through those banking results over the weekend. I mean, they were shooting lights out, left, right, and center, beating expectations, and I appreciate banks on the economy. This is market volatility. They made the most of it.
I mean, this is the other side of the ledger, right? Those US banks. I mean, while tech was getting absolutely hammered on Friday, those banks that reported early in the week, and use your expression, they did shoot the lights out. I mean, JP Morgan, they posted the highest quarterly profit in US banking history, $21.2 billion. That's for the quarter, Simon.
Yeah.
I mean, every single one of those big five beat the estimates. I mean, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, they all beat. And Difficult to think they wouldn't really. I mean, if they've been, tapping into those fees, we've had SpaceX's $86 billion IPO. JP Morgan led that, as with Goldman Sachs as well. They, I think Citigroup underwrote it. So, I mean, just think of the fees. Those banking revenue fees up 24%. And then if you had to add the volatility that we spoke about a second ago, trading revenue, Goldman Sachs, 82% up on the quarter in trading revenue. So, yeah, good times for the U.S. banks. And, yes, I take it it's not necessarily the economy, but the U.S. consumer is, 60% of that U.S. market. So, GDP. So I think it does tell of a fairly resilient U.S. economy, and they still remain the biggest economy in the world for now.
Absolutely. And I take your point. I mean, the banks might not be the economy, but to a degree, they absolutely are. Quick last one I mentioned in the intro, Brent, just above 90 early this morning. I mean, we're seeing volatility in oil. A worry, I suppose, is perhaps the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, no, I don't know why I have to end on a bad note, but, Brent topping $90, as you said. I mean, 9 days now that the U.S. have been striking Iran. Difficult to see. We spoke on the off-air. Difficult to see the off-ramp in this situation now. Market, I do think if you look at some of the natural gas prices, et cetera, also very, very elevated. I think the equity markets still don't know how to handle this. Brent is telling you, if you look at those four dated curves as well, might be dragging on longer once again than we want. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. That's my sort of synopsis on it.
Yeah, it's actually probably a fair point. We'll leave it there. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Always appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Warren Buhai, he is Senior Portfolio Manager, StanLib Asset Management. Warren, appreciate the time. The first 6.5 months of the year, no shortage of market turbulence. Yet despite that, markets, and even frankly the global economy, have kind of been surprisingly resilient. What does your analyst tell us around what's driving that resilience in markets and global economies?
Thanks for having me on, Simon. I'd say, firstly, obviously, the oil price coming down. We know it sparked above $100 with the Iran conflict explosion. Coming back to below $80 certainly helped. But more importantly, we think the AI, CapEx cycle going on is feeding massively into U.S. growth and parts of Asian growth, as well as corporate earnings. We're seeing a very strong corporate earnings season, both in Q1 and this one now that has just started in Q2. And a lot of that is driven by this AI CapEx in various parts of the world. And then thirdly, I would say fiscal support has been stronger than many people expected. So what I mean by that is fiscal deficits just aren't coming down. Central governments know they've got to support the market in uncertain times, and that's certainly what they have been doing. So I'd say those are the major reasons why the stability has remained, despite, as you say, a lot of chaotic things going on at the moment.
You mentioned AI as an important support for markets, and AI is many things. It's the chip makers, it's the hyperscalers. More recently, it's been memory stocks. But is there a risk of that market leadership, and it's becoming sort of narrower? Is AI still opportunity, or is it perhaps becoming a bit of a risk to the overall market?
Look, there's no doubt from our perspective that both the AI CapEx cycle that started in the last couple of years, still has a long way to go. Certainly all the companies' results we're seeing, if anything, it's been accelerating again the last couple of quarters. And as you know, the usage of AI has only really started rolling out over the last couple of years, and agentic AI has only really started rolling out this year. So it's reasonably early days, we would say, in the usage of AI. And so that's still got a long way to go, and that's clearly going to feed into parts of the market in terms of earnings growth and potentially productivity gains in the economy, which would be good. But for us, the risk is exactly as you say, that if leadership becomes too narrow, then the market, and disproportionate amount of returns come from the AI portion of the market, it does become worrying that the risk going forward is if anything changes with that AI theme, you kind of can get corrections. And there was a recent example now in Korea, actually in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Korean markets come off 25% from its peaks because of those concerns maybe about the chip prices being too high for too long. So cycle definitely intact, but worryingly concentrated parts of the market can suffer big corrections over short periods.
Yeah, and in fact, a breaking story I just saw on Bloomberg that the Korean regulator says no more leveraged ETFs coming to market. That's been creating all sorts of complexities. You mentioned in AI early days, and it absolutely is. I mean, you know, ChatGPT, not even yet 4 years old. We've seen a lot coming. But also, I'm thinking, you know, allied trades, power is an important component there as well. I was chatting, we had the BHP, I mean, maybe we even got stories around copper. There is a space where it kind of, in a sense, broadens as well. We just don't know which way that market's going to swing.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we think the next part of the cycle is, hopefully in markets, is a broadening of the AI theme away from just the what we call picks and shovels, which, as you say, are the chip manufacturers, and moving more out into the longer value chain of, say, that infrastructure build in power, where you need copper inputs, you need uranium, you know, a lot of other commodities which have lagged, and you can have those becoming a lot more popular over the next couple of years as the cycle continues.
To change tax slightly, sticky inflation, how has that changed the role central banks can play in supporting markets?
Yeah, it's a great question, because monetary policy for us is one of the bigger risks that we see at the moment. And what I mean by that is central banks don't have the same flexibility they had coming into this year. If you remember coming into this year, us together with most market participants thought that we still could see interest rates declining, and they had been declining for a while.
Yeah.
And then with the Iran war, you obviously saw that flip where the market expected a change from interest rate cuts to now interest rate hikes for the rest of this year into 2027. And that's become much trickier, because inflation is quite sticky, not just driven by energy prices, but also, funnily enough, driven by what's happening with the AR CapEx build. As you mentioned, a lot of shortage in different parts of that market, feeding into that sticky inflation pressure. Labor markets are firm in the US, also leading to decent wage inflation. And generally growth, interestingly, we've seen more recent months, a lot of the growth indicators we look at, things like manufacturing PMIs, have turned quite positive. Mm. And all this growth is actually feeds into sticky inflation and makes the central bank ability to cut rates, which is ultimately always what they want to do, much tougher in this type of sticky inflation environment.
I hadn't thought of that. When growth is, growth is not bad news, it's always good news, but when growth adds challenges, I suppose. The last question, to your mind, what should investors be prioritizing at this point, sort of just after midway through the year?
I think for us, it's more the diversification. Just because markets have become so concentrated, as you mentioned, the range of possibility, you know, the range of possible outcomes from us here have started to widen. In other words, in both directions, there's a very positive outlook you can think about if the AR boom continues. Mm-hmm. And you can think to the late 90s, if we kind of in the equivalent of 97, 98, there could be a lot more returns to come from the AR theme. But on the other side, sticky inflation, you know, can feed into monetary policy getting tighter, and then you start worrying about bonds selling off, and does that eventually feed into equity? So the likely outcomes range is starting to widen, and therefore it's important to be much more diversified, moving away from the concentrated parts of the market, like the pure AR theme and the picks and shovel winners that we've seen for the last 18 months. Try and get further exposure into what we would call the second and third order beneficiaries of AR, like I mentioned, down the commodity chain. And then kind of active asset allocation at the end of the day, which is, you know, what we do as multi-asset investors. You've got to be active in this market, just because things like the example I gave of Korea can move so quickly. When big markets are moving 20 to 30% in a couple of weeks, you know you've got to move your feet when markets move.
No, they are. Double-digit overnight moves. I wake up every morning, I look at Korea, and I've got no idea which way it's going to have gone, and it's going to go big. We'll leave it there. It's Warren Buhai. He is Senior Portfolio Manager, Stanlib Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan, Element Investment Managers. Keith, appreciate the early morning time. Netflix results out Thursday. I read them Friday morning. I looked at them. I thought, these not bad numbers. Revenue is up 13%. Good operating income, good operating margins, etc., etc. The market, however, did not like and sold the stock off quite a bunch, and it's down about 50% over the last year. What am I missing from the numbers?
Certainly, Simon. We thought they were great numbers as well. But this is a very growth-hungry market. And there's a couple of things counting against Netflix in this point. First of all, they tightened their guidance, and it wasn't some huge upgrade. And this is a very bullish market that just wants huge upgrades.
Yeah.
But perhaps more subtly, they're starting to disclose less about the financial, well, the operational metrics that we've been watching for many, many years. Subscriber growth, net hours viewed, things like that. And those are always viewed very weakly. I mean, in our experience, markets and companies rush out good news, and they slow and they obfuscate bad news. So that's but I mean, in Netflix's management's defense, their argument is they should be judged based on their financial performance, revenue and profits.
Yeah.
Everything else is their issue to worry about. But and then we also coming into this with, I mean, there was perhaps a view of it was a premium valuation for a premium growth story, that and there are certain indicators that the growth is slowing down. Arguments can be made contrary to that, but at this point, that's what the market seems to be indicating.
I take your point, and I did notice the engagement, because it was about 2 years ago where they said we're not going to give you subscriber numbers, engagement matters, and now suddenly they're saying we're not going to give you engagement numbers either necessarily. I also noticed, I mean, that they talk around actually doing a fair bit using artificial intelligence, and this is, as I understand, I mean, as shots and screens, etc., being sort of clever with it. We saw House of David from Amazon about a year ago do some. There has been some coming through. There is opportunity here. We can talk what we want in AI, but Netflix is actually going to probably get some real benefit from it.
Certainly. I mean, in our view, some of the biggest beneficiaries of AI aren't AI companies or anything to do with them. They're companies where AI can come into them and either lower costs or expand range or automate pie, et cetera, you know, the argument of real beneficiaries of AI, much like the real beneficiaries of internet, weren't the guys that laid the dumb pipes that all the data flows over.
Yeah.
So Netflix is a good example of that. They've used AI in roughly about 300 titles of theirs. And their view is that it's really mostly a post-production cost or efficiency gain. I'll give you an example, and they do on the earnings call give an example where they were filming one of the films they did. They had a huge battle scene that the producer, if he didn't have AI, would have looked at this and they couldn't have fitted it into their budget, so they would have dropped the scene or they would have somehow filmed it indirectly.
Yeah.
And they looked at this and they filmed the whole scene, and the crowd is put in, thousands and thousands of people but background are put in with AR. So once again, the focal point is not AR, and it's not generative AR. It's not building the story, not building the movie. What it is really polishing it within a budget and creating massive production efficiencies. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. And how is that different to CGI and everything we've been doing for many years in Hollywood and the studios around the world? So I think it's a logical extension. I think they're cutting edge in terms of this, and they're making the right moves.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, essentially, it's CGI. It might be more fancy CGI, but it is broadly just CGI. In a world where streaming is ruling the roost, and there are tons of streamers, and you know, YouTube perhaps the biggest, I think certainly in terms of hours, there are lots of other streaming. There's Disney Plus and others more so in the US, Netflix really is the number one here. I mean, this is the global leader in it. And I look at it at a sub $70 price and think to myself, we're buying the future of entertainment on our screens.
Certainly. In our opinion, Netflix is winning the streaming wars, full stop. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things to think about as well that become harder to replicate. Everyone thinks streaming is simple. You plug it into the internet and you can get scale.
Yeah.
But what Netflix has is they have... they've got distributed production around the world in regional markets. Things like Squid Games that came out of South Korea. Things, and The Polygamist that's come out of South Africa, that is based on a Zimbabwean novel that's getting cast around the world and gaining large traction. That is really, really hard to replicate in terms of that production, that distributed production. Have a look at Disney and a range of others, and they all have big centralized production, which is just starting to become echo chambers of the same guys making the same things. Whereas Netflix really, really has a competitive advantage. Their technology is better in terms of actually just literally using it on screen, streams better, it works better, et cetera, et cetera. And then they are really the biggest. You know, if you exclude YouTube, where it's really user-generated content mostly, Netflix, in our opinion, is winning the streaming wars. But their recent partnership with TF1 in France, which is really a local regional linear TV that's going to plug into their French Netflix accounts to be able to stream off Netflix as well. And Netflix is leaning into live sports and games and things like that. It's really a tacit acknowledgement that if you're to compete with everyone everywhere in the attention economy, you actually have to have everything all in one place. And I think that possibly in the future changes the margin profile, but perhaps gives them the second leg of growth.
I hear you on that. And I mean, I mean, sport is going to be huge for them in time. We'll leave it there. That's Keith McLachlan. You find him, of course, Element Investment Managers. That's our poll today on LinkedIn. Stock down 50% in the last year, worth adding to a portfolio. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. That's it for today. Chatting with Alyssa Flournius on Friday, rather. She's, of course, MD of Merchant West Investments. We're talking about BHP Group. They had an update, record copper pricing, 2 million tons of it, iron ore doing well as well. Both important minerals. We asked if Billiton is best in class. Over half said stiff competition. We chatted about Anglo-American as well. Third said yes, absolutely. The rest said no, miners for you. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. The cost of inconsistent investing.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.